Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, an Australian man, Robert Pether, who lives in Elphin, County Roscommon, with his wife and children, was detained in Iraq just over 3 weeks ago in a dispute between the Iraqi authorities and the company that he works for. Mr. Pether, who is 46, had gone to a pre-arranged meeting with his colleague when both of them were arrested by Iraqi police. I'm joined now on the line by Desiree Pether, who is Robert's wife. And Desiree, thank you very much for joining us this evening. I know this is an extraordinarily difficult time for yourself and your family, so thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Can you tell us a little bit about Robert's work in the Middle East? I know he'd been working in the Middle East for some time. Maybe about the most recent trip. When did he go there and why?
Yes, he's been in the Middle East for about 10 years, working all around. And then he actually started on this project about 4 years ago, and it's been running really smoothly. Then there started to be a little bit of a dispute between his employer and the client, and he was in Dubai and actually requested to come back for a meeting to resolve all the issues. And so he flew over on the 1st of April and then was arrested on the 7th.
So he flew on the 1st of April. We're now on the 30th. When did you realise that there was a problem?
Well, he was arrested around about lunchtime on the 7th, and normally he messages quite a few times throughout the day and then rings us in the evening to talk to the kids and to talk to me, and we just didn't hear from him. And then after about midnight, when I'd sent him a bunch of voicemails and messages saying, really, really worried, the next morning I heard from his company and they told me what had happened.
My goodness, so you're sitting at home texting your husband and you normally get the text back and you're getting nothing. I can't even imagine at that point what was going through your head, Desiree.
Well, you know, it's always in the back of your mind. He's, as I said, he's worked in the Middle East for quite some time, but this is probably the most volatile place. And yeah, it's always in the back of your mind, but you just never really think it's going to happen.
So his company called you the following day and said he'd been arrested. Did they have any more information, or what could they tell you at that point?
No, nothing. At first, we didn't know what it was about, and we actually didn't even know where he was for a few days. So they just disappeared into the twilight zone.
So you were left with that information then on the 8th of April. What could you do? Was there anyone you could contact for help? How did you get any further information on what had happened to him?
I contacted embassies everywhere, everyone that I could think of. And then his colleague is Egyptian, and his embassy has been amazing and been so helpful, and helping Robert as well, even though he's not Egyptian. And it's really, really so fortunate that they have been helping, because otherwise we would still pretty much know nothing. And you know, he wouldn't even have a toothbrush.
So you found out from the Egyptian embassy, because he has a colleague who's Egyptian, a lot of what is going on. What did you find out? I mean, when was he arrested? Where was he taken? Was he charged with anything?
No, we still don't know exactly what they have been arrested for. Today is day 23, and we're still very much up in the air with what's happening, and hoping to get some news one way or the other next week. He was able to make a phone call for a few minutes 3 days ago, so that was good that I got to talk to him for a couple of minutes. But it was a huge concession, and we don't know when it will happen again.
And what did he say on the phone call?
First thing, I'm sorry. And I said, you know, it's not your fault. None of this is your fault. And then, you know, I was talking to him about embassies and the Australian embassy, and I was telling him about the support from Ireland, and he was absolutely amazed and just so grateful as well.
How did he sound, Desiree?
Devastated and just, you know, betrayed. He's worked on this project for 4 years. It's the first major project in Iraq, and he's worked on it for 4 years and kept it afloat through a year of global pandemic. And they even wrote to him in February and said what an amazing job he was doing. And then all of a sudden this has happened.
So did he know when he was talking to you, was he able to shed any light on why they're holding him or whether he's been charged with anything?
No, when they arrested them on the 7th, they took their phones, their laptops, their hard drives and their paperwork, everything. And so he's basically been cut off all this time, and actually we know more than he does.
And when you say, for example, he wouldn't have a toothbrush without the Egyptian embassy, do you know anything or what do you know about the conditions that he's in or how he's been treated?
I believe that he's actually in fairly good condition and being treated quite reasonably given the circumstances. So he's, you know, now he's a lot better off now, and the Egyptian embassy is so involved because his colleague was actually arrested with him.
Okay, so the Egyptian embassy, as you said, has been very helpful. I know your husband contacted the Australian embassy in Baghdad before he left Dubai to go to Baghdad. So they knew he was going there, and did they raise any issues? Were they aware of any problems?
No, he rang because I was nervous about him going back until the problems were resolved. And he rang the embassy in Baghdad and said, my employer is having a problem with the client. They've got some disputes. And so am I okay to go over there? Will I be safe? And they said, well, you know, they're not going to arrest an employee. And so he left and went over there and then got arrested straight away when he turned up for the meeting. So he spent the first 2 weeks in his suit.
In his suit, as in the suit that he was arrested in?
Yes.
How are you coping?
Just. It's really hard. I might sound really calm, but I'm just trying very hard not to completely lose my mind and upset the children, and just having to stay strong for everyone.
You have three children?
Yes.
And I believe 17, 15 and 8, is that right?
That's correct. The 17-year-old's trying very, very hard to finish off his leaving cert.
And so he would know exactly what's going on, would he?
The boys, the two older ones, do know exactly what's going on. And after a few days, we told the 8-year-old as well, because she knew something was up and he hadn't contacted and spoken to us for days. And we told her the phones were down. And she's just doing lots of pictures and things that she wants to do with Daddy during summer.
And what are you saying to them, Desiree?
For the most part, pretty much I'm telling them everything, the boys, because they're older, and keeping them up to date on everything. And, you know, there's a few little tiny bits, but for the most part, they know most of it.
And are they managing okay then?
As well as could be expected, yeah, as the 17-year-old's, I think, doing amazingly to be still studying and still doing exams. And the 15-year-old, he's having a few more problems coping with it. And then the 8-year-old is a little bit younger, so she doesn't quite understand the ramifications as much.
And, of course, that's sort of the problem, really, for yourself and for the families, that you don't really know what's going to happen here. I know your husband has Australian citizenship. He doesn't have dual citizenship. So in terms of the help that you can get, is it the Australian embassy really that you need to rely on?
Well, we're trying to get help from as many countries as we can. And, I mean, we live here, and he was actually just about to start the process to become a citizen here too, and except that the last 12 months have been a little bit hectic. And so, you know, it's just really as many countries supporting as possible to say that this is absolutely outrageous and not acceptable behaviour at all, especially it's the first project in the country and they want people to come and help rebuild their country. So just as many countries as possible that can actually get on board and voice their displeasure for it would be absolutely brilliant.
I know Fianna Fáil Senator Eugene Murphy raised Robert's case in the Shannon, and the Taoiseach Micheál Martin also said earlier this week that the Irish government would do everything possible to resolve the situation. Do you think there will be much support coming there?
Well, I certainly hope so. It's absolutely amazing, and he's absolutely blown away by it as well. And it's just so good to get that support from Ireland as well.
I'm sure you're getting a lot of support locally.
Yes, I have. I've had quite a few people pop by and just tell me that if I need anything. And one neighbour was really lovely and dropped off some wine and cheese and a breadstick. So, which was really, really nice. I'd not met her before, and it was a lovely gesture.
Do you know when you'll be speaking to him again?
No idea. That was literally, it was a huge favour, and we really don't have any idea at this stage how long it will be before we speak to him again, or for how long, because it was literally only a couple of minutes just to make sure he was all right, and for him as well, because he was so desperate not knowing if we knew what happened to him or if he'd just disappeared and we didn't know.
Okay, well, Desiree, I'm so sorry for the situation that you and your family find yourselves in. I can't imagine the stress of it, but thank you so much for coming to talk to us about it this evening. And hopefully by talking about it, there will be more and more support gathered for your case, and you'll get the help that you need. But for now, at least, thank you very much, Desiree Pether, for joining us this evening. We'll take a break.
Thank you.